WSJU Radio, St. John's University. We have a very special guest here tonight, the one and only Matt Barnes. Matt Barnes, how you doing, man?
Well, how about yourself?
Doing all right. How's your day going?
My day's been good, man. Busy. I had ESPN earlier today, and then I had another interview and a couple business calls, and then I got practice. My twins have practice at 7:30 California time, so still right in the middle of the day.
Yep. Have you tuned into the inauguration at all?
Yeah, I got a chance to catch some of that earlier this morning when they're sworn in, and then, you know, one TV is on CNN, the other's on the Nets Cleveland game. So just tuning back and forth.
I've heard about all the racism that you went through throughout your career, and which was crazy during your time with the LA Clippers. Those were the years of the Sterling years, as we all remember. Do you think that normalcy has finally arrived back into the White House now that Biden is the president and Trump is gone?
I think there's some decency and normalcy has definitely returned. But at the same time, I think Trump was needed. I think Trump's presidency was needed for us to really see that there's still a lot of underlying issues in this country that people try to sweep under the rug. So, you know, when stuff like the Capitol raid happened, you obviously don't want to see anyone hurt, but at the same time, we needed to see that because we see that there is a double standard when it comes to law enforcement and the way they treat people in general. So, like I said, I'm glad it's over, but I definitely feel it was needed to kind of really get down to the root of all these issues that have been plaguing the minority, particularly African American culture, for a long time, and hopefully we can just start rebuilding in a new direction.
Yeah, I'm hoping that things get better as soon as possible. What are some ways you feel as though that the new presidency, especially with the Vice President Kamala Harris, can institute to make things better as far as law enforcement goes? Because I heard about your story about the cop that arrested you three times and was following you around in Los Angeles.
Yeah, I mean, I think people have to understand it's going to be a slow process. You know, obviously we didn't get here overnight. We won't fix it overnight, but I think continuing to push the issue, the fact that we, you know, have a majority in the Senate now, we can start passing bills like the George Floyd Justice and Policing Act. But I think overall, it's going to be an overhaul of the system. You know, the police union is the reason why, because the police union is so strong, the reason why cops pretty much walk around fearless and don't mind killing people, because 9.5 out of 10 times they're going to get out of it. So I think, you know, we have to be creative in the way we restructure funding, and then also, you know, break down this police union and rebuild it, because, you know, no, obviously we need cops, but we need cops that are going to do their job, not cops that are going to, you know, have prejudice towards certain ethnicities.
Yeah, and we saw what happened with George Floyd over the whole coronavirus pandemic, but we've been seeing it for years, and which is always interesting to me is why was there so much people speaking out now, because it's been going on for so long.
Yeah, no, absolutely. You know, this is something that's been going on, you know, since social media has kind of really been prevalent in people's life. We've been speaking on it. And, you know, for some reason, they always have a reason why it's okay. You know, there's people that obviously back the cops and say, oh, he shouldn't have did this or he shouldn't have did that. The police aren't there to kill people. The police are there to protect and serve. You know, that's what they're sworn in to do. That's supposed to be their job. But too often, you know, they play judge, jury, and executioner, particularly on minorities. So, you know, now that that's been brought to the light, it's still been happening. But like I said, hopefully with this new administration, we can really target in on police reform and rebuilding the police union, hopefully, and see if we can make some kind of change.
I'm hoping. I heard that they're going to be working weekends, so they better get the job done.
A lot of work to do, man. A lot of long days ahead of them.
A lot of things to overturn that Trump did.
Yes. Yeah. So, I mean, I think it's important. Obviously, you know, the first day they said he signed 17 pieces of legislation, I think, or 17 something, but they said nine of them were to overturn, you know, basic dumb stuff that Trump did. So, like I said, it's a lot of work to kind of hopefully put out the fire and start healing. And then once we go from there, we got to start digging at what these issues that have been plaguing our country for a long time have been.
What's interesting in learning about you and always being a fan of your time in the NBA is that you play multiple sports. You played football, baseball. You also ran track. What made you want to go into the NBA instead of pursuing a career in the NFL? Because you're a good football player.
Yeah, you know, my first sport and first first love was football. You know, my senior year, I was All-American, led the nation in touchdowns, recruited by several schools. But, you know, I just kind of figured longevity. Football came easiest, but, you know, I knew if I had a chance to play basketball that, you know, I would obviously probably be able to get more years out of that because, you know, being 6'8", growing across the middle, you have a small timeline in the NFL. So I figured that, you know, trying to continue to grind and make it in the NBA was going to be, you know, a better longevity choice than it was. But there wasn't a day that passed that I didn't think, like, what if I would have played football? Because, you know, football was my first sport. It was what I was naturally, feel like, born to do. But I took the, you know, the harder route for me was the NBA. But, you know, I was able to make a 14-year career out of it. So I'm happy with that.
And an underrated 14-year career at that. Who was your wide receiver that you looked up to when you were a wide receiver in high school?
Jerry Rice first, and then Randy Moss. You know, getting a chance to see Randy being a bigger, faster receiver, you know, which I was. But growing up, I was a huge Niner fan. So just the precision that Jerry Rice ran his routes with, how hard he worked off the field was really kind of my motivation when I was in high school.
So I'm a Jets fan, so we actually hired your defensive coordinator this past week, Robert Saleh. You got to be upset about that.
I saw that. You know, we go through peaks and valleys with the Niners. I think obviously we have a good core of late. I'm hoping we sneak in this Deshaun Watson sweepstakes and able to get him somehow, some way. But, you know, we got a good coaching staff. You guys, you know, taking our defensive coordinator. I think we were top five in defense this year, even though we had a down year. So you guys definitely got someone good, and I wish him the best of luck.
You're ready to move on from Jimmy G?
I am. You know, it's tough because, you know, his situation was different. You know, he got everything handed to him without necessarily proving much. You know, obviously he got off to a hot start, but when you know, in hindsight, he really hadn't done that much. And I don't want to even sound like I'm hating. He just, the numbers and games, he really hadn't really done that much. You know, he had a hot streak when he came to the Niners and he got all this money, but since then it hasn't necessarily been what we've all thought it was going to be. And I'm a firm believer that Deshaun Watson is probably a top five quarterback, if not higher, in this league. So if we're able to get someone like Deshaun, I think that'd be great.
Yeah, he's definitely a top five in this league. I hope maybe the Niners can get him. I hope the Jets can get him. I'm done with Sam Darnold. So,
you know, to me, it's tough to always judge, you know, say, I think Sam being in a tough position because that O-line, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Dude, a chance to really sit back there and survey the scene, he is going to throw nothing but picks. So, you know, I think so much goes into the organization you actually go to when you're a young player, whether it be quarterback or into the NBA. A lot has to be said. You know, when you're these top picks, sometimes you just get in these terrible situations because the team is so bad and it's kind of hard to get out of that team funk.
Yeah. I want to get into your time with the Knicks because everyone always talks about the Warriors. And as a Knicks fan, because you did play under Larry Brown.
Yeah, that was a crazy situation. So I was, I got traded with Chris Webber. I was a throw-in in the Webber trade when he got traded to Philly. So I was there for 1 year, didn't really get a chance to play. Told my agent I didn't want to go back. Let's go somewhere else. And I hadn't really got a chance to play in the NBA. So, you know, it was kind of slim pickings. I want to say right before training camp started. Training camp might have actually already started. I went to training camp late. This is when Isaiah was the GM.
Yeah.
They're late, played really well in training camp, end up making the team. I remember a story, like I went to training camp late, and I don't know if it was Larry Brown's rule or if it was Isaiah's rule, but you couldn't get on the plane without a suit. And, like, they didn't tell me that on the way. Like, I flew there, and then, you know, going back to New York, I hadn't even been to New York yet because I went to training camp late. So they said I couldn't get on the plane without a suit. I had guys giving me like one, I don't remember, Penny Hardaway gave me some pants. Someone gave me a suit jacket. Someone gave me a belt. I got some dress shoes and somehow I was able to muster up a suit to get on the plane. But that situation was great. Like I said, I was the last person coming to training camp. I beat people out. Guys are hurt. So I go right from like the last invitee to starting, you know, the games. Playing well, you know, thinking that, okay, I'm finally getting a chance to play, kind of showing what I'm doing. And then all of a sudden, one day, Isaiah comes to me and, you know, he tells me that we have too much money on our injured reserve and we're going to start bringing some of these guys back. I'm like, okay, so I figured maybe I'm just not starting no more. But he cuts me. And so I go from starting to being cut within a short amount of time. And then I ended up going back to Philly. So although it was brief, you know, obviously it was an honor to put on that Knick uniform and play in the Garden as a Knick a handful of time, but it was really short-lived. I didn't feel like Isaiah knew what he was doing, and I think he proved that he wasn't there, you know, in that position very much longer. But like I said, it was a fun quick run with them.
Rare words for you to say that it was an honor to put on the Knick uniform. Why don't players want to play for the Knicks anymore? Is it Dolan? What is it? Is it that they just don't have a winning culture?
I think it's that. You know, I definitely think it's the culture. I definitely think the owner plays a big part in it. You know, management has been good of late, but, you know, once you get kind of a bad reputation or a bad taste in the player's mouth, it's all about, you know, what's hot and what's not. And the Knicks haven't been hot. So, you know, you've seen guys want to go to Golden State. Obviously, guys want to go to L.A. Guys are starting to want to go to the Clippers now. So it just kind of, you know, the Knicks kind of fell out of the loop of late. And they haven't had any luck. But, you know, I like how hard Thibodeau has been playing. I think they're one of their game above 500, a game right below 500, but still in the mix. And it's going to take hard-nosed, tough teams like that for a superstar to take a chance and want to join that. So it's going to have to wait and see.
Yep. I hope Thibodeau brightens up and actually realizes that he needs to start quickly at the point guard position. That's the guy. That's the point guard that we've been waiting for since Stephon Marbury and John Starks.
Yeah. No, it'll be interesting to see. Like I said, you know, Tibbs is an old school throwback type of coach. And, you know, maybe not be high on young players. But, I mean, the kid has definitely got talent. So, eventually we'll have to see what happens.
Mm-hmm. I remember the games that you played for the Suns. I also remember the games when you played for the Grizzlies and you chased John Henson into the locker room.
That's funny. That was, what was going on there? I mean, that was just a game where we went into Milwaukee, and it was a good battle, and they pulled away at the end, and this guy hadn't really got no minutes all game. So he comes on the court like the last 2 or 3 minutes, and I'm not mad. I mean, he's supposed to bring energy. That's his job, but he's out there yelling and bumping and flexing. I'm like, bro, you haven't even fucking been in the game all the whole, like, relax a little bit. And he's talking shit to one of our players, and then, like, flagrant fouls one dude. And then I say something to him, and he says something smart. I don't even know what he said the first time. But then another play down, I went, and he ended up blocking my shot and screaming. I'm like, all right, motherfucker, you don't calm your ass down, I'm going to fuck you up. And something tough to me. And then I kind of just let it go. Like, all right, this dude's got, you know, this dude's running his mouth like he's tough. I kind of let it go. And then for some reason, I got a tech too. So he got his second tech. He got me my second tech. All right, so I'm about to go fuck this dude up. He just got kicked out of the game. So I run into their locker room. He runs, obviously he gets ejected before, goes to the locker room. I get kicked out and I just start running to the locker room. I don't know. For some reason, everyone started following me and they must have knew I was going to be on some shit. So I run into their locker room, and I remember Grievous Vasquez wasn't playing at the time for Milwaukee, and he comes out and says, oh, he just ran out the back. Like, I literally ran into the locker room looking for him. Next thing I know, I look around, my coach is down there. Police officers are down there. Security's down there, so it was just some funny shit. So I didn't end up getting him in the locker room, so I hurried up and took a shower, and I waited in the parking lot for him. And when I tell you, like, I was literally the last one to get on the second bus, and, like, his teammates were out there laughing. Some dude's like, yo, he's standing right behind the door. He's not going to leave until you get on the bus. So I'm like, fuck it, I'm not leaving then. And then, like, the stadium or the police that worked the arena, you know, came and got me and told me, and then got someone from my management on Memphis and ended up making me get on the bus. But I was going to fuck him up that day. I was tired of his
I think you're probably one of the only players that would have survived out of the modern era in the 90s era.
I think it would have been a blast. You know what I mean? Like, I don't claim to be the toughest guy. Don't act like the toughest guy. I'm just football at heart, and grew up fighting. You know what I mean? So those two are just really physical things. So, the way I look at basketball is I was just a football player playing basketball. So I always loved the physicality. So I definitely would have loved the opportunity to really guard people and really hard foul people without the fear of getting fined for these weak ass flagrants or technical fouls they give you for touching people now.
Yeah, that's the thing. That's why it's so terrible nowadays. You see the old days when the bad boy Pistons, when they're going at the Celtics, you see those old fights. You don't see that anymore. And the refs let it go on.
I think obviously it's the NBA was trying to clean up its image, although it was, you know, rugged and really a man's game back then. I kind of feel like the NBA felt like anytime you fight, it's a bad reflection on the league. But I don't think the fans saw it that way. I think the fans saw it as, I mean, this is a really competitive game, you know. So unfortunately, you used to be able to get away with, you know, throwing a couple of them and not getting a fire, 3-game or 4-game suspension. You know, sometimes you just get a T and keep playing. You know, you watch some of those Boston Laker games where they're clotheslining Kurt Rambis, and, you know, next thing they're all pushing and shoving, maybe a couple punches thrown. Next thing you know, they're all still in the game. So those are kind of the good old 80s, 90s days. You know, I caught a little bit of the physicality, you know, me coming in 2002, but, you know, by the time I left in 2017, it was a completely different rule set and defensive rules and all kinds of stuff. Much more favored for the offensive player.
Mm-hmm. And everyone nowadays, and because of your ex-teammate Steph Curry, just shoots three-pointers. The Warriors really changed that. They changed the game with the three-point shot.
There's no question that Steph completely changed the dynamic of the way basketball is played, and not only on the highest level because it's – copycat situation. So from every level, from high school to junior high to elementary school, you know, I started coaching my kids when I retired in 2017, and I want to say they were 8 or 9 years old. And you see kids that age shooting 23s a game, 33s a game, and I'm just like, yo, what happened to running to the basket for layups? Like, kids run in transition now for 3-point shots. So, you know, I think there's some good and bad with it, because obviously Steph is the greatest shooter we've ever seen, and Clay, yep, number two. So they make it look so easy, but it's not as easy as it looks. So, you know, hopefully you got to be able to shoot that ball to not, you know, you're shooting it to make it, not just to shoot it.
Mm-hmm. And the Kobe flinch, it's one of the most iconic plays in basketball history. You see it all over the place. Rest in peace to Kobe. I know he was a close friend of yours, but what did Kobe teach you most, or something that was the most important thing that Kobe taught you?
I think his approach, you know, we got into it, and it was always the mutual respect, going back to when I was in college and he got first got to the Lakers. But I just think his mindset, his approach, you know, his attention to detail, and how he led by example. You know what I mean? He was obviously the best player on the team, best player in the league, but he played through injury. Dove on the floor. He took charges. He set hard screens. Like, Kobe played his ass off. So who was anyone else on the team not to? You know. So I really appreciate just his Mamba mentality and the way he approached things. There was always a time and place for everything. You know, people think Kobe's a killer all the time, but he was just a killer on the court. You know, a real cool, laid back, shit talking dude off the court. Jokes. I would talk shit to him. He would talk shit to me, kind of stuff. And, you know, he wasn't like, oh, don't talk shit or don't crack jokes on Kobe, but he was just one of the dudes, you know, when he was one of the guys. So, you know, obviously with this untimely death coming up on a year anniversary next week, it's really unfortunate. But I was blessed to be able to compete against him, play with him, and then from there, you know, have a real friendship and brotherhood with Kobe.
And rest in peace to Kobe Bryant. I think he's number two all time.
I agree. I think LeBron has a chance to pass him if he can add some more hardware. But I definitely think he gets a lot of disrespect. Somehow it's always a LeBron MJ conversation. But to me, Kobe is ahead of LeBron still.
Mm-hmm. I agree. You play for the Golden State Warriors in the We Believe years, and you were able to go back in 2017 and win a championship. How'd that feel?
I had mixed emotions, you know. Obviously, to be able to go back 10 years after we made NBA history with a bunch of outcasts.
2007.
Yeah, the We Believe team that kind of, you know, took the league by storm. Going back 10 years later was a great opportunity. I ended up getting hurt going into the playoffs, yeah, and didn't get a chance to play, which was frustrating because, you know, my whole career I took less money to play on better teams to win, and I was finally on a team, obviously, with the firepower to win, and I'm right in the mix, you know, playing 20, 22 minutes a game, and, you know, about a week and a half, 2 weeks before the playoffs, I nearly break my ankle, and I'm kind of out of the mix for a long time. So, it was dope to be able to say I got a chance to play on that team. But the kind of person I am, like, nothing was ever given to me, you know, and I had to grind for everything that I ever received in the NBA. So I kind of felt like, you know, with me being hurt and not getting a chance to play, that championship was given to me. But I think it was dope that my two twin boys were able to come along for the experience, right on the plane, be in locker rooms, be in shoot arounds, be, you know, water boys, and really kind of be a part of the experience. You know, when we won the championship, they were on the stage like they won, trying to take the trophy from Steph and KD. So I really think the experience that my 9-year-olds got at that time was what I really cherish about the opportunity.
Mm-hmm. And what was Steve Kerr like as a coach? Because when you hear all the analysts and critics, they say he's got all the talent in the world on that team. But what makes Steve Kerr a great coach?
Steve is great because he's a player and he knows how to read players. I think sometimes guys that didn't play are over the top, hands-on. But I think, obviously, Steve, being a student of the game, playing the game, getting a chance to play under some great coaches, and Phil Jackson and Greg Popovich, I think he really understood how to obviously be a player's coach. And Steve was good at implementing what he wanted to do, but getting out of the way, you know, trusting his players. And that's a thing that you don't get from a lot of coaches. And I don't just mean, you know, trust, just he trusts that, you know, once he gives you a format that you're going to be able to create within it. And I think that's what was best about him. You know, he knew that with those dynasty teams, he had, you know, veterans and some of the best players in the world, so he didn't have to be so hands-on. But, you know, now it's kind of a different situation where you lose KD, obviously. Klay's hurt, and it's just Steph and Draymond from, you know, that dynasty run. So, obviously, his approach probably now is a little different because he has younger guys, so he has to be a little bit more hands-on. But, you know, he's great at reading situations, and I think that's what makes him such a good coach.
Mm-hmm. And you received your ring on the jump. I remember I saw that a couple months ago.
And what happened was everyone said, like, oh, you didn't want your ring. This isn't that. That wasn't the truth. They actually gave me a ceremony where the twins and I both got our rings at a game. After I retired, I went back. But the box was so big that the ring was in. After they gave it to me, I stayed and watched the game. So I had Raymond Ritter, who's the president of media for them, I had him lock it away in this room, and I was going to get it after the game. And then after the game, we couldn't find the dude with the key.
And it was locked, and you couldn't get in. Yeah.
It was locked. So it was just a bunch of, you know, hit and miss. I never really had an opportunity to get it. And then out of the blue one day, like I said, Ray is my guy. Shout out to Raymond Ritter. He had it driven down to LA, and they surprised me on the jump. So I thought it was really cool, and just really kind of showed what kind of organization that is, what kind of person he is. Like, once a warrior, always a warrior in their heart. And had a great time there.
Mm-hmm. Would you ever coach in the NBA, as you told me before, you coach your kids?
No, never. It's too much time.
Yeah.
Way too much time. And towards the end of my career, that's what I didn't like, was how much time it took, how much time I had to be away from my family, how much traveling I had to do. And being a coach is, to me, obviously playing is tough, but, you know, being a coach, like, the day never stops. You know, when we go to, after we're done with practice or after a game, we get to kick back and kind of relax a little bit. You know, they're on to the next game, onto the next game plan, or getting scouting ready for the game you just played. There's really no downtime for coaches. So to answer your question, I would never coach in the NBA.
I know you're big into hip hop. You're a big Tupac guy. Nipsey Hussle, rest in peace. You were cool with him. What was your introduction into hip hop, especially being on the West Coast? You had Def Row Records going on at that time.
You know,
the G-Funk era.
Yeah, I got a lot. You know, the Warren G's, the G-Funk era, Death Row. Obviously, knowing about N.W.A., but I was really young when N.W.A. was like hitting.
Yeah.
So I kind of caught the N.W.A. era into the Death Row era. But I was really West Coast. You know what I mean? So all I ever heard was on the radio. We didn't really have no money, so I wasn't out there buying CDs. So it was Snoop, Dre, Pac, Cube. You know, we heard of Biggie. Obviously, Biggie was big enough to make it over there, but it was crazy because, you know, I didn't go to college until 98.
Mm-hmm.
But I had never really listened to Jay-Z until I got to college because, like I said, I didn't really have no money to play CDs, and they weren't really playing East Coast music outside of Biggie and Puffy on the West Coast.
Yeah.
So I finally got an introduction to Jay and his greatness once I got to LA and got a little bit of pocket change. And it was able to kind of really broaden my horizon in the music space. But, you know, I grew up a straight West Coast hip hop fan and been in love with it ever since.
Mm-hmm. What's your top five hip hop albums to come out of the West Coast?
Albums. I don't know about albums. I'd give you all my top five West Coast artists.
Mm-hmm.
I would say Pac. I would say Snoop. I would say Dre's in there for producer, and The Chronic was a classic album to me.
Yep.
E-40.
Mm-hmm.
The Bay Area Love. And who was the last one? Probably, man, I love Nip. You know, to me, Nip was, you know, and like I've been a fan of Nip since 2009, and his body of work, you know, if you're a real Nip fan, speaks for itself. So I'd probably put him in my top five West Coast artists.
Mm-hmm. Who's your favorite producer on the West Coast? Was it Dre? Because you also had Daz Dillinger out there.
That was dope. DJ Quick was dope.
Yeah.
But obviously Dre. And what he was able to do, and you look at under the lineage, first of all, that kind of Eazy-E started, but after, you know, Eazy-E brought all of them together, like the lineage of what Dre did on his, you know, as a producer, as a rapper, but then of who he brought with him and who he helped discover and who he put on. So I would definitely say Dre was my favorite.
Mm-hmm. How do you feel about the current hip-hop state right now? Because I'm a critic on it, because I like the bars, I like the lyrics and the beats from back in the day.
I feel you, and I'm the same way, but I'm also to the understanding of, you know, this is what their generation is. You know what I mean? I would much rather hear some 90s rap than most stuff right now, but there are some artists that are, you know, a little bit, and I'm not even talking about like the Drake, J. Cole, Kendrick era. I'm talking about the dudes younger than that. That's the music that's kind of like hit and miss for me. You know, my kids will put me on cool songs every once in a while, but there's a handful of guys that I like The Baby, Lil Baby, Roddy Rich. There's a handful of guys I kind of feel like they really kind of still have a little bit of that old school. And when I say old school, it's crazy, but you know, that 90s, you know, where you're really telling a story and painting a picture when they rap. So there's a couple of guys that still do that for me.
Dave East does it for New York hip hop.
Yeah, Dave East is hard. I like Dave East. Dave East is definitely a throwback.
I heard about your involvement with Suge Knight and the Suge Knight story. Have you met Suge Knight before?
I've got a chance to meet Suge in person. I also got a chance to talk to him on the phone a couple of times, and we actually did have the Death Row story ready to go. Oddly enough, I went to college with a girl named Dorothy Canton. And
that was his niece.
Yeah, and that was you know, her dad, Mark Kent, is the creator or one of the creators of Power. So I told her, like, yo, I think I got an opportunity at a crazy story, and it's the Death Row story. And, you know, you've heard stories from everyone else, you know, but you haven't really heard a story from Suge. So, you know, I had the team that was working on Power ready to do this show after. But then once shit started getting real, you know, there were just demands of cash that couldn't be met because they were too outrageous and too many hands started coming in the pot. So I had to respectfully walk away from that story. But I hope that, you know, at some point someone is able to make that story, because I think it's such an important story in hip hop and how important Suge Knight was to hip hop.
Mm-hmm. Do you think he gets a lot of hate that isn't deserved?
Some of it's deserved, but there's also a side of Suge that, you know, the media doesn't want to show, you know, and all the giving back he did and all the helping in the community he did and, you know, how he took care of people. So there's always kind of a give and take situation, obviously, in most stuff, particularly in rap, because rap was rugged back then. They don't really want to show the loving give back side. They want to show the dirty, raw, gritty side. And he was good at that side, too. So, like I said, some of the hate he gets, he probably deserves, but you know, there's always, you know, most of the time there's, you know, two parts to people and we really didn't get a chance to see the other part. So that's obviously with the dirty, gritty shit, you know, I was hoping to bring some of that to life as well, is kind of, you know, balance them out as a man and a businessman. But unfortunately, that project never got off the ground for me.
Mm-hmm. How are you enjoying retirement?
I love retirement, man.
Yeah.
Super, super busy. Obviously, you get to spend a lot more time with my kids, which is first and foremost to me of importance. But just enjoying, you know, projects I'm working on, you know, being able to have the podcast do what it does, being able to work for ESPN, working on a bunch of other projects, creating projects. You know, I got a project that I'll be starring in later in this year. So it's just been a fun journey post-career. And don't have any regrets, any doubts, wishes I should I go back and play? Should I play the big three? Like, I had a fun 15-year run in professional basketball. And, you know, when I walked away, I was really done with it.
Something about the big three that would be interesting is that you'd be playing with players like Charles Oakley. That those are players that kind of remind me of when you played, the toughness that you brought to the game.
Yeah. Well, that was the one thing that kind of drew me to the big three that I liked. You know, like I never really – I got a chance to interview Ice Cube one time, and he came to my house, and you know, he was telling me they're on the eve of expanding three new teams, and he'd be giving my own team, but I just wasn't really into it. Like I said, I didn't have that urge to play basketball no more. But the one thing that I did like about the big three was the physicality. Like, they really,
yeah.
I can definitely appreciate something like that. So, you know, although I'm done, like I did like the physicality of the game, but you know, I just kind of felt like my time was up in basketball and I was ready for what was next in my life.
Mm-hmm. You're working on a lot of projects. I know you want to be a billionaire and you're working towards that. You're involved in cannabis and a couple other projects. What are some other things that you want to get involved in? And you've had such an interesting life, and I think people will love to hear the story if they haven't heard it in interviews. Would you consider creating an autobiography movie?
I'm working on actually a documentary about something that happened in my life when I was in high school when this kid was bothering my sister.
And, oh, with the racist thing. I heard about that. And they came, the KKK came in and vandalized the school. Crazy.
Yeah, I'm working on that story, which I think is going to be really big. So we're ready. We're almost wrapping up, heading into post-production for that soon. So hopefully we'll be selling that by March or April. I'm in the tech space. I'm in the cannabis space. I have a fresh pressed juice company with a couple of friends of mine from my hometown. So I'm just all over the board with different projects that I enjoy. And I mean, I got a long way to go, but obviously setting the bar high is something I've always tried to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm looking forward to hearing about that movie and the documentary, the thing that happened in high school. That's crazy. And something that I want you to, for the basketball players that may be tuned in right now, St. John's is, we're a big East team. You know, St. John's, of course. What's something that you could tell the players and give them encouragement if they're not drafted or if they're drafted in the second round and they go through things that you went through, because you went through a lot of downs and there were some up times in those points too?
It's just a grind, you know, like Nip said, it's a marathon, you know what I mean? So you have to stay even keeled. You have to first and foremost believe in yourself and you have to keep pushing. You know, if you feel like you're good enough to make it, you got to go out there and show the world. And, you know, that was something. I was drafted in the second round, cut, played in the D League, and then finally got an opportunity, but still didn't really secure, you know, wasn't really secure in this league until I got to the Warriors in 07, you know what I mean? So for 5 years, you know, bounced around, played on a handful of teams and just never really got an opportunity. But like I said, I believed in myself, and when my number was called, I was ready. Just really staying ready, understanding that it's a grind, it's a marathon. And when you get your number called, you got to be ready because you only make, you know, you only get one chance to really make a first impression. And the first impression of me getting consistent minutes, I made the most out of it and then kind of found myself, you know, made a career out of it.
Mm-hmm. Who was the toughest player that you played against in your career?
Kobe. The toughest person I had to guard, but, you know, I was in a position where I had to go to all the best players. You know, when I played, your best players were normally your two or threes. You know, we were coming right at the big man era. You know, the last of the Shaqs and all that kind of stuff was coming to an end. So it was really a two-guard and three-guard dominated league. You know, so I had to guard LeBron. I had to guard Kobe. I had to guard Melo. I had to guard D-Wade. I had to guard Ginobili. I had to guard Paul Pierce. You know, I had to guard the best players on the floor every single night. But, you know, if I had to pick one who I felt was the best, it was definitely Kobe.
I know you played against AI too.
Yeah, I played with AI. Like I said, I got traded. I didn't really play when I was there, but got an opportunity to see how he moves and goes about his business day by day, which was amazing because he's such a small guy, but he has so much heart and plays so hard, played through everything. He was just beat up, but you know, he was just a soldier out there. So it was an honor to kind of have a front row seat and watch AI for a couple of years because, you know, he's one of the greatest to ever do it.
It's a shame he never got a ring.
No, it definitely was. You know, like I said, he was special, man. You know, for how little he was, the effect he had on the game was amazing to see.
Mm-hmm. He's also a good rapper. So is Shaquille O'Neal. He's a friend of yours.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't. You know, that's a tough space. You know what I mean? And I respect music so much that there are a handful of guys that could, you know, could really rap. You know, I think Shaq was so just well known and so hot when he rapped, it was just the right time. Obviously, he put bars together and he went platinum. But, you know, that's a hard space to cross over into, you know. So, you know, I respect the music game too much to ever had really given that a try. But, you know, there's a handful of guys that could, you know, somewhat spit.
Have you ever tried?
No, that was never really
no.
But I respected music too much, and it was never really my thing. So I was always just a real big fan of music, never got into it at all.
Have you ever thought about, you know, because you're getting into so many businesses, getting into the music industry, whether it's creating a label or something?
No, that's too much time.
And yeah.
I just have the passion to do it. Like I said, I want to get and do stuff that I enjoy doing. Like I said, I love listening to music. And it's kind of, you know, you have soundtracks for your life. But as far as being involved in the business, it's a dirty, grimy business. And, you know, I don't have time for shit that I'm not really passionate for.
Yeah. What was the most memorable moment throughout your career?
To be honest with you, I would just say having the longevity I had. You know, I've seen a lot of first picks and lottery picks and first round picks come and go. And for me to last 15 years, in a league I wasn't even supposed to be drafted to was kind of my memorable moment. You know, I got to make, you know, millions of dollars playing a sport that, you know, I grew up loving, you know, so I really feel like I was very lucky. From that standpoint, so I would just say, you know, obviously there was moments that were special, but I just think my ability to last as long as I did was my most special moment.
Do you see your kids playing in the NBA, following in your footsteps?
You know, I hope, but you know, whether they do or not, I want them to be happy. You know, so I'm gonna support them with whatever they do. You know, I'm teaching them business at an early age. You know, they're working on launching their podcast right now. Also have a show with their AAU team because, you know, we're the number 3 ranked 12-year-old AAU team in the country. So we have a little show that we've been working on for like the past 4 or 5 months. So hopefully we'll bring that to life soon. But like I said, regardless whether it's the NBA or whatever profession, you know, I want to just tool them in this business space. So by the time, you know, they get the opportunity, whether they're able, lucky enough to go or not, they'll be straight regardless.
Mm-hmm. Who do you predict to be in the finals this year?
I like, to me, the Lakers or Clippers in the West. I think I have a feeling we're going to get a chance to see that this year. I think obviously the Clippers choked last year and they realized that. So I think hopefully this year they're back with a vengeance. So out of the West, I like those two teams. And I really like Brooklyn. You know, I think they're going to be able to make their big rework. The only thing is they're just a small team. So they're going to have to outscore people. But I think it's going to be a fun season watching Brooklyn. I like Boston. I like Philly in the East. So it's been a fun season thus far, although it's only a month old.
Well, I hope it's either the Clippers or the Lakers, but not Brooklyn because I'm a Knicks fan. So you can call me a hater, but I'm a true Knicks fan.
No, I get it. I completely understand. I think it's dope that, you know, both teams right now are in the playoff picture. Obviously, we know Brooklyn is going to continue to rise. I feel like they're, you know, top 2 or 3 team, if not the number 1 team in the Eastern Conference. And the Knicks are kind of hanging on, which is cool. So it would be cool to, if you imagine, like a 1-8 matchup or a 2-7 with the Nets and Knicks. That'd be crazy.
Yeah, well, we'd get scraped, but at least we made it back to the playoffs since 2013.
It's just a process, you know what I mean? It's baby steps, so you know you got to take that if you can get it.
Yep, you're right. Number 9, you played for the Knicks, and then it, like you said, it was an honor put on the uniform. I remember when you played there, and you know, I think all the Knicks players that want to play there and people who played there, and you know, you're always in the Knicks tape.
Yes, those are, you know, like I said, it was a short-lived experience, but it was fun, you know, for the energy of the Garden and be able to, you know, call that place home for a little bit. It was definitely a fun little run.
Yeah. Matt Barnes, I want to thank you for coming on the show. I had a great time speaking with you. And anything else you want to let the listeners know and tell them where they can follow you on social media?
Yeah, you can follow me at Matt_Barnes9 and Matt_Barnes22. Those are my two social media handles. And, man, thanks for having me, and best of luck with your show, bro.
No doubt. Thanks, Matt Barnes. Anytime you want to come on, you're always welcome.
No doubt, bro. Have a good one.
You too. All right. Peace.